Hey, Club Random Fans, guess what I did? I wrote a damn book. It's called What This Comedian Said Will Shock You, and it's available for pre-order now where you get your books or at simonandschuster.com.
When I first saw Monty Python when I was a kid, I lost my mind. Like, this is everything that I want.
Club Random.
If I could have just been a pure stand-up and never done anything
else. But you're already known as the purest of the pure stand-ups.
Club Random.
I must tell you, I got up this morning. I was like Christmas morning. I have felt that Christmas morning vibe because, like, Jerry Seinfeld's going to be here.
I am excited too. I've been excited for a couple of days.
It looks odd that we're talking about being excited in this position with each other. Sit down. There's a stripper pole right there.
I see.
But you'll never guess who just called me. Leno.
I just talked to him too.
But I said, yeah, I haven't seen him in a while. I really would love to get together. Maybe the three of us when you're out.
That'd be amazing. So that's what's good about these shows, though, which I'm sure you've already discovered. And I discovered with the Comedians in Cars, people I can't. I'm not calling people up and hanging out. But if you do a show.
I said it every week.
Yeah.
Both people who I know, like you, who are like, exactly, why are we here?
Yeah.
Because we're forced to. We're not. It's just this crazy force of thing that makes us. We don't need the money. You don't need the promotion, although we'll certainly do what we can.
Thank you. But the other thing is, I don't know how you feel. I think you might be a little different this way, but I don't like to be around people not working. The working is kind of this base. It's like a baseline current. It's like a beat. It's like I can hang out with almost any comic if we're here to do a gig. If I'm here just to enjoy your company, not good.
But to me, no, the art.
It's not going to be good enough, your company.
I can get a set in and a chat
and screw around.
And get some new material.
Yeah.
I mean, I could take that the wrong way, but I'm not going to. Yes, I completely see the point about, and said it too, about work, but also to, while you are working, do exactly what you would be if you were not working. In other words, if we were just here and we weren't working, I want this conversation to be zero different.
Oh, that won't happen. That can't happen. Because, I mean, I'm a savvy professional. Do you think I don't know that if I say something stupid, it won't...
Okay, I can do it.
No, even you are a savvy. You are also
true.
The savviest professional, if I may. What do you weigh right now, Bill? What do you weigh?
Why is that a relevant question?
What's the name of the show?
Club Random. You're
okay.
Right.
What do you weigh?
I think probably 152 today. What?
Today.
Today. It varies from day to day.
Yeah, me too. I weigh 166 today.
And what were you in 1979?
79, I was probably 150, probably the same. But I think you have you're slightly smaller. I don't know.
Over time, or you mean compared to you? Yes.
It's a frame.
You're a little bigger.
A little bit, yeah.
Also ego.
Yes. Well, I don't know. That's a close race. Let's.
Well, listen, before I forget, So what can I get Jerry for his birthday? I mean, the man, you have everything. You're a great star.
Never get tired of that. Do you ever get tired of that?
No.
No one else ever said those words. But Don, you're a great star.
I know. I only say it to you.
I love
it. No one else.
I love it.
But
I want you so bad.
But she took the necklace off and the head hits the sink. Some of those things, they made no sense. You know, drop your pants and fire a rocket.
Well, he didn't want to say fire a rocket out of my ass. That's what he wanted to say.
Oh.
But he was very, very clean, which is interesting because he had those little, what do we call them? He would just kind of bend the rules, let's say, for television and for his, you know. But yeah, drop my pants and fire a rocket out of my ass. That's what you're supposed to finish it in your head.
I didn't even know that was a thing.
Oh, sure.
Well, I loved it as a kid, no matter what he did, you know, and he certainly would be the eminently cancelable today. I promise you. I saw him.
You can't move him from then to now without him.
Modulating? He wouldn't have.
You don't know that. He's going to want to work. I think the man likes to work.
But I saw him doing it like later than it should have been. I saw him opening.
Yeah, that was a miscalculation.
Right.
Yeah.
Anyway. I wanted.
This is so, you should, Bill, it's I'm not, so touched.
It's not, you don't even know what it is yet.
But I'm not really touched.
What it is, well, I hope you were touched by what I gave you at your
60th. I put it very prominently in my little den.
That was.
The metal rabbit, I love it. Okay. And I look at it and I think of you and it's a bit,
okay.
It's too much because you really.
Well, and it's true. And let me tell the people.
Oh gosh. Do we what? Have to?
Oh,
you
really?
Can tell them?
You don't want to?
All right, go ahead. It's okay.
I mean,
it's not a big deal. It was very sweet. I'm very nice.
But it limbs, I think, for an audience who you really are to us, the comedians. I had a rabbit made. And by the way, they don't make rabbits. I had to have it made because you can get a bunny on Amazon.
Right.
Bunnies are all over, but not like the rabbit in motion. And the idea was Jerry was always the rabbit among the comedians. He was the leader of the pack who we were all chasing. And it was inscribed, "The Rabbit We Never Caught." What, you don't remember that?
Of course I
You said it like, oh.
I don't think I read it. Does it say that on there?
It does.
Oh, I never read it.
Oh.
I'll go home right after this and read it.
You just remember me saying it at the
Yes.
That's interesting. Wow. Well, anyway, that's exactly who you are.
Thank you.
You've also been a great friend. You know, you were there when I did the first week of Politically Incorrect.
Yep.
You didn't have to. Mm-hmm. You flew to Washington on your wife's birthday in 2014 when I needed a guest when we did our special show in D.C. Remember that?
That's right, when you did the stand-up special.
And I certainly have vivid memories of, like, one time I got off stage at the comic strip and I had tried, like, all this new material.
Right.
It was my first year.
Right.
And I remember I look back and I think you must have been thinking, you fucking idiot. But you were nice enough to be like, yeah, you should just try one or two new things. And it was, you know, advice I needed to get and probably did not follow for another 3 years. But I went through all, like, my file from 1979, because I thought, what can I get the person who has everything? You've got the amazing career, the perfect wife, the great family, the adoration of a grateful nation. The only thing I could get you is to amuse you and give you a memory or bring back a memory. So here's my show and tell box. Look at this from 1979. What is that?
Comedy Hour. Biltmore and Company.
Oh, Bill, I don't know why I'm in Company. It's my first year in comedy.
Yeah.
But look at the time.
12:30 to 1:30. Well, you can't give me this.
I'm not giving it to you.
What?
There is something I do want to give you.
Oh, okay.
That I've treasured for 50 years, 60 years. But
60?
Yeah. Yeah. It's 1964, but 12:30. The fact that
that's
we were
great.
Doing shows.
All the time.
And this is, 12:30 would be a bad time to do the show, a.m. or p.m. But this was noon. This was a nooner. Okay. So, all right. So here's the thing I want to have framed, if you like it, for you. See if you can see what this is. I bet you are here.
Boy, Oh,
I'm a pack rat. You're not.
Oh, my God.
Do you know what that is?
Of course I know what it is. And I love this more than anything, yes.
Were you there?
I live for it. I went many, many times. And I have quite a bit of memorabilia myself. Anything blue and orange that says World's Fair on it, I have it. Not anything.
Well, that is the map that told you where all the pavilions and everything was at the 1964 World's Fair.
Which, let's be honest, Bill.
What?
And say, there's a sadness to what the world seemed like to us at this time, what we thought it was, what everybody wanted it to be, right?
I was looking at this the other day, and I see, like, you know, the GM Pavilion, mm-hmm. and the four, and I thought, you know, nobody bitched about every fucking thing back then. Now, every pavilion would have somebody in front of it, like, you know, you're making oil and you can't,
yeah.
you know, like, nobody would just enjoy the fucking...
Well, it's Jimmy Brogan's great heckler line that he used to do when people would start to heckle. He would always say, "I'm sorry, we don't have microphones for everyone." Remember that line?
No,
and
I don't.
Unfortunately, that's what happened.
Right.
That's what happened. And yes, it ruined everything. But how do you have this? By the way—
Because I'm a pack rat. I'm the opposite of you.
Oh, is this a map of the World's Fair? It looks like an architectural rendering.
Well, I think they gave it to you, like, so that you could know where, you know, hey, I'm here at the Finland Pavilion. No, really, and we want to get to Muriel Cigars before lunch.
We want to get to Muriel's.
I remember walking around here and at one point being very, like, tired and my feet were hurting.
Yes. Remember how boring the countries were?
yeah.
I don't want to see any countries.
Right.
Let's go to the
world.
Well,
the Caribbean, you'll see that was on there. Yeah. That was kind of a good one.
Do you remember the stories of the kids that got lost in there and their parents left them there and they were living off the coins in the fountain to eat corn dogs?
I don't remember that, but I do remember kids getting lost there. And
well, if you're going to give this to me?
I want to have it framed and then give it
yes,
to you.
Yes, I would love it, and I'll put it up on my wall.
Yeah,
because
isn't it,
this means a lot to me.
And you can look at it endlessly.
Yeah.
Because it's so intricate, and they have all the...
Incredible.
Oh.
Thank you, Billy. That's
yes.
lovely.
See? You can't get that at Sears.
No.
So, funny that you mentioned Jimmy Brogan. This is what I took out of TV Guide in 1979, the year I met you at the clubs. I kept every one of the fall preview issues of TV Guide that had all the new shows. You know what I'm talking about?
Of course.
And that was like, that was a big event for me when I was a kid.
The fall shows, yeah.
Like, this one I do not remember, but this is a man called Sloan, Robert Conrad.
Wow.
I loved him. I wanted to be him.
Yeah.
What a stud. Stars as Thomas Remington Sloan III, a stylish, cosmopolitan, and unnervingly effective globe-circling secret agent, not unlike James Bond, who reports directly to the President of the United States. But look who's at the bottom.
Out of the Blue with Jimmy Brogan.
And I cut that out because it was like, wow, I know a guy in TV Guide.
Right.
Like, that really... See, like I said, like there was nobody else here.
I've read for Trapper John so many times.
What?
That I don't know why they kept reading me. They never put me on the show. I was desperate to get on in the 80s. So here it is.
Trapper John?
Trapper John.
I didn't know you read for guest starring on...
A couple of times, yeah.
I know you did the Benson.
Yes.
You were a regular.
Yes. Well, I did 3 episodes.
I thought it was like 7.
No, it was 3 and they fired me.
Oh. Oh.
Mercifully.
That's very close to the guy who didn't sign the Beatles.
Yeah.
You know.
Oh, sorry.
That's all right. By the way, drink? You don't drink? Or you just have coffee?
I drink, but it's a little early and I'm driving.
You're driving. You drove yourself.
Yeah.
What a stud.
Yeah.
But we know how you feel about cars.
Yeah, I drove... An old Mercedes-Benz diesel here.
I mean, I just, that level of car, I mean, I guess Jay has it too.
Level of car enthusiasm.
Yeah.
I don't want to talk about that.
I don't either.
I don't like to, I know it's not of any interest, but...
But to your credit, you made it interesting to me on the show, like when you did those Acura commercials.
Bit. Yeah, you got a little interested.
I know. Well, not enough to like pursue it, but like it was, I was interested in the connection you had between the person and the car.
Yeah.
Why you felt that was, that I thought was elegant.
Yeah, people like that.
I never understood the one you picked me up in. It was a German police.
It was for one joke, which is, it was a VW police car, because this is, you're someone who seems to have a lot of power and has none. And I thought that's what that car is, a VW police car. You're police, but you can't catch anybody. So,
well, Yeah, I guess. I noticed that, like, in that show, though, like, in your own kind of Seinfeldian way, you did become, like, such a truth teller. Mm. You know, not, obviously not political the way I do it, but, like, you just used your political capital from the first show.
Right.
I felt like, you know, the popularity that you had accrued to, like, go, well, I'm just going to say what the fuck I want. And it's not always going to be that pleasing to everybody. And that's, so to me, the most refreshing thing in show business.
Yeah, but it wasn't, it was nothing really. Like, I suppose it was a little more revealing than what people had known prior, but not that much.
Really?
I don't know. Whatever you
think. That's what I think.
Oh, okay.
I mean, just because you weren't playing from a script like in
right.
the show. I mean, you're that's a character, first of all, obviously close, but you know, I mean, the situations were so absurd,
right?
And I mean, were ridiculous that it was a show about nothing. Nothing. It was a show about everything,
right? Yeah,
I mean, all those,
right?
That's not. And then now you're just talking to somebody, and,
right.
and they're saying, you know, like, what do you think you owe your kids? Nothing.
Right.
You know, you said things about like family and stuff like that. That was like, oh, wow.
Yeah.
You know,
well, that's what this show is, but what you've accomplished with this show, because I thought nobody has always been more, I don't want to use the word transparent, but we probably know more about your opinions than any other celebrity in,
right. yeah.
out there. And yet on this show, there was a whole other world of stuff that I can't believe. I still can't believe. When you were on with, I think it was Mamet, and you got into a thing about the battery shortage in Germany, that they were trying to go electric when they kind of overshot it. And I'm going, how does this guy stop at that article in the paper and say, I need to know more about the German power grid.
Stop. You don't think you know about many, many things?
No, I don't. Not like you.
Really?
No, I watched the show to see what does Bill know that I didn't know he knew. And I'm always blown away.
Wow.
That one was amazing. And then you talk with that other guy about the Bible, and you know all about the Bible.
I'm old.
I know, but your brain is worthy of all the attention it gets.
Well, finish your thought, Jerry.
Yes. No, I think you're amazing. And I'm enjoying you as much now.
You're such a sphinx. I didn't even know you ever saw this show.
I watch everyone.
How do I know these things? I texted you about doing this. You never texted me back.
I texted you back.
No.
I'm a fan of the show.
Oh, yes, that originally. Then I texted you about a month ago and said, what about when you're doing promoting the Pop-Tart movie? And I didn't hear back. Your people got back and said, yeah, he's going to do it. I was like thrilled, but it's like,
because I already told you I want to do it.
I know. But most people are not quite. See, again, I'm a Rat Pack. You are the guy who is, there's no extra. No extra.
I do like that. I love no extra.
Yeah, I mean, I think, to quote one more thing that I quoted before about the Paul Simon song, that I always think that is you. And it's such an amazing song, One Trick Pony. And you're anything but a one trick pony because you've been successful in, when you did reinvent the talk show, you had your series and you've done movies. But there's that middle part. He makes it look so easy. Look so clean. He moves like God's immaculate machine. He makes me think about all these extra moves I make and all this herky-jerky motion and the bag of tricks it takes to get me through my working day. I feel like I'm the herky-jerky guy.
Well, you're not.
And you're the guy who's like just gliding through with no extra and no baggage and no stupid mistakes.
That song, by the way, hit me like that too. I thought, that's everything I want to be, what he's describing. I go, that's it. That's
you
what
don't
I
think
wanna...
you are that?
I don't try. I don't know.
I mean, you're always like more mature than the rest of us. Like back in the day.
Well, what did you do that was immature, professionally speaking? We all knocked around.
Professionally and personally, many things. Not
professionally.
Yeah, absolutely professional. I used to piss off the crowd, so they hated me so much. No matter what kind of joke I told them, no matter how funny it was, they would never laugh. That's the most unprofessional thing you can do. I remember once at the Comedy Cellar, the MC getting on after me and saying to the audience, okay, that bad man is gone now. That is absolute, Bill Grunfest, I think it was. That bad man is gone now.
Yeah.
I was very...
Okay, I consider that just...
Growth.
No, creative experimentation that, yeah, you need...
No.
Just got to experiment.
No. It was totally a function of a bad attitude.
Your bad attitude has matured into...
Yes, I hope.
Totally. You're one of the most successful people in the history of television and stand-up comedy.
I have been on a long time.
Yes.
Let's be real. Most guys would wear a t-shirt every day of their lives if they could. The problem is that most t-shirts are not acceptable to wear at work or out on a hot date. Today's sponsor, Cuts, has finally changed that. Cuts t-shirts are such high quality, wrinkle-free, and so buttery soft that you look like you're dressing up even when you're dressing down. Yeah, you heard that. Wrinkle-free. You never have to substitute comfort for fashion ever again. For a limited time, you can save money while redefining the dress code by heading to cutsclothing.com and use code RANDOM for 25% off. The fabric is breathable and sets the standard for softness. When I wear one, I'm high, of course. I can barely stop touching myself. Wait, that came out wrong. You want cool? Cuts is the trusted fashion brand of professional athletes. If you've ever watched your favorite pro team enter the arena, there's a good chance you've seen them sporting a Cuts t-shirt under that chinchilla duster they roll up to the game in. For a limited time, our listeners get 20% off your entire order when you use code RANDOM at checkout. That's 20% off your order at cutsclothing.com with promo code RANDOM. Please support our show and tell them we sent you. Experience the perfect blend of style and comfort with Cuts Clothing. Club Random is brought to you by Skechers Hands-Free Slip-Ins. I'm thrilled to have discovered Skechers Hands-Free Slip-Ins. They're easy to put on, stylish, and say goodbye to head rushes from bending over to tie your shoes. Scientists did a study, and they found that the average person spends 4 months of their lives tying shoes. I'm kidding, but that sounds about right to me. Skechers Hands-Free Slip-Ins come in a variety of types of shoes, boots, and sandals, with and without laces. They're especially convenient when my hands are full or I'm mixing a cocktail here at Club Random and need to quickly run out to go feed my ducks. I don't have to remember to tie my shoes. Find them in shoe stores everywhere or go to Skechers.com/random or text Skechers to 511-511 for 25% off your first pair of Skechers hands-free slip-ins with free shipping and returns when you sign up to be a Skechers Plus member. Go to Skechers.com/random or text S-K-E-C-H-E-R-S to 511-511. Remember, there's no T in Skechers. Go to Skechers.com/random to save 25% off your first pair and receive free shipping. Terms, conditions, message, and data rates may apply.
Yeah, my aesthetic role model was Mike Tyson. When I saw Mike Tyson in his prime, when he cut the hole in the hotel towel and had no socks and no stool and black shorts with nothing on them,
right.
I thought, that's what I want to be.
Oh, my God.
And recently, just a few years ago, I don't know what it was, I said, why do I have these different colored ties and suits? I go, I'm just wearing a black suit and a black tie from now on. And it just felt so... calm. We visited Japan last December. Mm. I was so happy there. I connected so strongly with that ethic of their culture of just focus and simplicity and singularity of purpose. You know, I do like that. And I have done these other things. And I have to say, it's all with a component of reluctance. I do it to think, I think I could do that, you know, like the movie. Like, I think I could do that. Or let's do a different type of talk show. I think I might be able to do that. But it's not really what I wanted. If I could have just been a pure stand-up and never done anything
else.
But
you're already known as the purest of the pure stand-ups. That is like your, and it's real. And by the way, this leads me to something I feel nervous about telling you. I feel like you're the confessor to this, but like after this year, I'm going to stop doing it.
Really?
Well, or I could go back. I don't want to make like a big announcement or something. Well,
go ahead.
Well, I mean, I'm doing a special at the end of the year.
Right.
It'll be my 13th for HBO. That's a lot.
That's a lot.
And I just feel like you got to, I don't know. You know, first of all, I put a lot of time and effort into it because, as you know, stand-up is like playing the cello. You
Absolutely.
Can't just walk up there. You have to stay in practice.
Absolutely.
And I do.
Yeah.
And I've always loved it. And I'm always working on it. But I have a show.
Yep.
You know, I mean,
I don't know how you kept it up during the show, or frankly, why. But you did.
Because they fed each other, first of all. It was so great. And also because I love it. I mean,
yeah.
it's you know, I can be the loosest. I can, you know, the show is great, but there's constrictions there. This is looser. But, you know, what's looser than just you people paid to see me?
Yeah.
Even if you don't like it, you kind of have to laugh just to get your money's worth.
Uh-huh.
The way you stay in a movie, even though it sucks. I don't want to walk out. My father would pay $2 to see a movie and would hate it and wouldn't leave. To get my goddamn mother's.
Great.
Yeah, he waited until it came to the theater, you know, where there was one theater in Bergen County where the
right.
movies would come late, and so they'd be like $2.
Yeah. All right. Let's get back to
Yeah. So, you know, but if I don't have to practice the cello 8 hours a day,
right.
I can do, you know, I might want to do some of these kind of things live. That's kind of an interesting option that people do nowadays.
Oh, right.
You know, and then it's kind of an event.
Interesting.
You know.
Yeah, It's not crazy. It's not crazy.
I mean,
the landscape of the business, which is one of the things I love about the business, is everybody's like, well, what is going on? You know, what do we do? What are we supposed to do? What's so and so doing? Why is he doing that? Should I do that? I love that endless grind. And everybody is always haranguing. Everybody's always on the phone. You know.
You mean like what's happening in
the business? Yeah. Like, did you see what so-and-so did? What'd you think of that?
Right.
You know?
Right. Streaming and, you know.
And I think perhaps for you, for whatever feels right for you at this point is what's right.
But that's after 40 years, that's why I don't want to like make an announcement. This is my final, because I might change my mind. It might be like cutting off a limb and I have to go back to it.
How do you view the show? How do you view real time? You know, how old are you now? 60 something?
Jerry, I'm right, always hot on your heels.
Okay.
When you
well, whatever it is.
A year and a half behind you.
Whatever it is. Yeah. Do you ever look forward or do you stay focused?
Only forward.
Only forward. But I mean, do you think, you know, maybe another five and
no, I can't.
Did you ever hear the Lorne Michaels line? I asked him, how much longer do you think you'll do SNL? He says, you know, I think it'll get to the point that I'll feel like I'm slowing down and I don't have the same edge. I don't have the same enthusiasm for it. And he says, when I get to that point, I'll do 5 more years. And I love that answer. I love that answer. I would love for us to compare notes. Who is more addicted to show business, you or me? Because I love it to death today as much as even more. Everything else in life for me has fallen away, has gone gray. I mean, I loved having kids, and that whole side of my life has been great. But you always have to say that, you know. But but if you're just talking about work, let's just talk about work.
We can chiron it, Jerry. Yeah.
You know, I love show business as much today as ever, if not more, because I tried every other goddamn thing.
But you say you don't love show business; you love stand-up.
That's show business.
I know, but it's that one aspect. Again, you're such a minimalist. You're so direct with everything that everything peels away. No extra things.
Yeah.
And that's you. That's why I think you will do it till you drop.
I will.
And maybe I will too. I don't know. It's a tough decision, but I also feel like it's easy as you get older to not do new things, and that's what keeps you young. I think that's part of the reason I want to do this.
Is definitely.
Like, because, look, I mean, we're doing a podcast. If you said to me 10 years ago even, you know, the big thing in show business is going to be basically AM radio.
Right.
I would have said, you're crazy.
Right.
And yet, I mean, you talk about too many people at the beginning of the marathon
right.
clogging the road.
Right.
I mean, there's like 4 million podcasts in America.
But no one's doing this one.
I know, but it would be like if Johnny Carson, when we watched him, had, you know, 4 million like late night shows that people had, that they, you know, maybe only 500 watched this one and 1,000 watched this one, but his rating cumulatively, all those tiny ants sucking a little bit away, would have left him not with 17 million, which he had at his height, but, you know, something much more modest. That's the problem with so many podcasts.
No.
Why? What
are you? First of all, you're doing the thing that you hate the most, which is moving people around in chronology. If Johnny Carson was, forget that. We're here now. You're you. We're here now. It doesn't matter what he would have done, or what matters is this makes.
Go ahead, finish your point.
Oh my God! What year is that?
1979.
Oh,
Carson must stay. Can you, what a baller he was, right?
Yeah.
I mean, just to like have the headlines like about what you, but I'll, you're right. He would not, I mean, as great as he would not survive today. He was just, that show breathed way too much for the current audience. Right, I know. Yes, I.
Who cares? The world wouldn't make him today.
Right.
They don't make those guys anymore.
No.
They don't make George C. Scott anymore.
You know what loomed large in our world, even as late as 1964, because it was 20 years after, but World War II was like, my childhood, I look back, it was like everything. My parents were in it.
Mm-hmm.
TV shows were about it.
Right.
Hogan's Heroes and McHale's Navy and combat.
And didn't you kind of feel also as a kid, I just missed it.
I mean,
wish
it was,
I could have been that.
When I played Army, I played World War II. And
yes.
It wasn't, and there was no nuance to it. We were good.
Yes.
They were bad.
Yeah.
And, you know,
It was like a big hug musical. That's what World War II was. Here's a musical for everyone, you know.
Yeah, and everyone was involved in it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, nobody was ever like, yeah, I'm just doing something different these days.
Yeah.
No, you know, World War II.
But anyway, I'm still not quite to the essence of why it feels right to you to not do it anymore.
I don't know.
Because it's the cello, and are you...
that's part of it.
Travel and
travel,
writing. How much time? How do you?
No, I
don't
love
even.
It.
How do you do a TV show and do any stand-up stuff?
I mean, I'm not married, no kids. All my time is mine.
Right.
So that's one way. I like that. I mean, you know me. I think we're very similar to this. I love the tinkering.
Mm-hmm.
I love the. I put that word in front of this thing and I move this over here. It's like putting together a Rubik's Cube.
Yes,
you know?
Exactly.
And I move this here and now it all fits. You know, for 6 months it was good, but now it's great because...
Yes, yes.
And I feel bad for those audiences that last 6 months.
Right.
And they, because like, but it's same way in a relationship. I always felt like, oh, if I only knew what I learned on her.
Yeah.
With you, I would have been a lot better with
yes,
you.
Yes.
But I can't, you know, we can't reverse time.
But you didn't answer my question about real time.
What was that?
Which is, think of how many years, first of all, you're at it, 25 years?
Real time.
Starting with
That's
Politically Incorrect?
Well, it's 31.
Okay, 31. That counts.
Oh, I know. I know.
So what do you think?
Well, I certainly wouldn't want to quit now because I feel like I'm at the top of my game.
Absolutely.
And lots of people tell me that. And that's why I put out this book, Jerry. I signed it to you also. But, you know, I'm a book.
How'd you do that?
The strike.
With the same glasses, even.
The strike.
It's amazing.
The strike.
Oh.
I had 5 months to, and it's all the editorials we do at the end.
Wow.
That I put together in a way that made sense.
Of course
and
you
re-edited
did.
No, I put a lot of work into this.
Oh, I'm sure you did.
Shut up. I think what stand-up is for you is what writing that editorial at the end of the show is for me.
Oh, okay.
That's what
I never, ever miss.
Oh, thank
for
you.
For the writing.
Thank
for
you.
For the flow of it, the consistency is shocking. Your level of consistency is shocking.
Well,
And it's the best comedy monologue every week that anyone does. And you even make a point on top of being funny, which is, you know.
Usually a point no one else is making.
Right.
It's very easy. And I can't tell you how much I appreciate that. I mean, this is Christmas morning for me now. But, other shows I feel like are partisan one way or the other. I rarely hear a thought that I haven't heard anywhere else. You know, they will amplify it and get...
Right.
But their audience doesn't want to. The audience today just mostly wants to hear what they already believe. And they want, yes, Trump's an asshole. And Trump is an asshole. And I certainly have done my share of jokes about that. But I'm always trying to say something that's not breaking a news story, but breaking a new way of looking at a news story.
Right.
And, you know, consider this. And...
It's just fantastic.
Thank you.
It's fantastic.
Well, I appreciate it. And
You know what? I don't know. Like when you would go on Larry King, that was always so great.
Yeah, I loved that.
It was great. That show, don't you think there's a hole for that show?
I think it's Joe Rogan. I think Joe Rogan, what? You just put your hands up like...
What I'm getting at is I thought special about that show was that it was 9 o'clock. Every night at 9 o'clock, Larry King was going to be sitting with someone who would probably be of interest.
Yes.
And that was a great TV. That was great TV. The set, I thought was, I loved the multicolored dots, the blackness. You know, not like he was the greatest interview in the world, but he was good.
Well, that's why I compared him to Joe Rogan, because they're both minimalists. Both of them do zero research by their own admission.
Right.
Like, I think Joe would say the same thing Larry said. I want to be the audience. I want to be the guy who knows nothing about you.
I know, but he's on for 3.5 hours. Larry King is, you know, it's on at 9. You're wandering around the house. You're looking for something to do. Who's on Larry King?
Right.
That was a great thing. I can't believe they haven't tried to replace that. I don't know who... would do it, but...
Well, they did. Piers Morgan did it for a minute.
Yeah, he wasn't right.
I don't think it's the fact that there's nobody right for it. I think it's the fact that the audience is different. I mean, we don't have... Well, that was one of the last shows... Well, it wasn't really a hearth show, but like in our...
It was a hearth show.
Okay, so like in our youth, but not to the level like in our youth, like when there was 3 channels and all the new shows were in that issue of TV Guide... Mm-hmm. Like, the family had a communal experience with television.
Mm-hmm.
Don Rickles, you know, we all remember it was an event when he was on The Tonight Show, especially in the summer when we could stay up. The famous one where he threw him in the Japanese bath, the massage. I mean, it was
amazing, that throw, by the way, that he was able to do that.
Why are you saying it was
fake? It was quite jiu-jitsu that he...
Oh, Johnny threw him.
Yeah,
yes.
When Johnny threw him in there.
Johnny was a mean bastard. And like, you don't fuck with Johnny. I mean, that's the other thing about Johnny. He could be terrible to people. But
everyone at that level should be terrible to people.
No, you don't mean that.
I don't
You're
really
not
mean
terrible
that.
To people.
I'm not. But when you hear someone is, I can't believe anybody thinks anything of it.
I think there's levels to it, and I don't think everybody is. I think he was just, especially when he drank, I mean, he just had a really mean side to him.
Right.
And he could close off. I read that biography by Bushkin, remember?
Right, yeah.
Bombastic Bushkin, right? And I felt it was so true. I don't know it's true, but everything I know about Johnny, and it wasn't kissing his ass, and it wasn't covering anything up. You know, he said he was just as cold as that. His mother was like,
yes, he
very
was.
Cold to him.
But in a way, it made it easier to watch him. I can't watch people that want me to fill that need for them. I can't do it.
I agree.
They're exhausting.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Just a bombastic Bushkin. Don't you think that joke was his intense jealousy of Dr. Vinnie Bumbatz, Rodney's great doctor?
Oh.
I think Carson loved that joke so much, he wanted his own. And of course, he would steal when it suited him.
I'm telling you, that's what I mean. He was just a badass. He broke into his wife's apartment. You know that?
I don't know.
That's in the book. It's like when they were going through the divorce.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like, did really badass things.
I don't know if that's badass. It's just bad.
Yeah. Well, I'm just saying, you didn't fuck around with him. And yes, I do remember. What'd you say? What did he do?
That bombastic Pushkin was...
Oh,
I wish
oh,
I
he
had,
was a thief.
He loved Dr. Vinnie Boombatz.
But he stole the answer man from Steve Allen.
And he stole Maude Frickert from Winters. Yeah, we know. It was horrible. And then he would have them on the show.
Yeah, well, what they could do. He was the king.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm not saying it was admirable, but I guess, you know, that persona kind of, he was gracious. You know, that was what was Johnny's calling card. But boy, when that light, red light went off, I don't think he was that guy.
Did you have little interactions with him in the hallway ever?
Little, of course.
Wasn't that the most exciting thing in the world when you would see him coming down the hall with the tie down?
Didn't ever tell you the story, but when I saw him the last time I did it and Leno was about to take over and he walking out and he's in his car, he had like a Corvette.
Yeah, the Corvette.
And it wouldn't start. And I said, boy, I bet you Leno knows everything about cars. I bet you he'd know what to do.
Oh,
and he looked up and he went, yeah, we'll see how much he knows about television. I'm telling you, he was a bad man.
Yeah. Well, these guys, you know, it's not a coincidence that they're there, all these guys, whether politically, entertainment industry, corporate world, a lot of people are there for a reason.
But I feel like a late night host is always a reflection of the society that we live in, better than a lot of other signposts. I mean, like, that's why Leno was right for his era and Johnny was right for his era.
And what do we have now? We have Jimmy Kimmel, Stephen Colbert.
Yes.
And Jimmy Fallon.
I think are right for their era.
In that.
Why, look at this. Here's a.
New breed of stand-up comics. What's that?
Oh, these are the two articles that were in the New York Times.
Am I in any of those?
You probably are. Here's Adrian Tolsch with a Catch a Rising Star t-shirt.
I have a Catch a Rising Star t-shirt that I wear all the time.
It still fits?
It's a new one.
Because I hear when you wash them, they make lovely hand puppets for the children.
Oh, my God, Bill.
I know.
Calvin Fussman.
Calvin Fussman? Who's that?
He's the writer of this ridiculous thing. Why are you keeping this? Just because it's comedy in the day?
You know what? Every year of my life, I make a file where I just put stuff in because I like to be a good caveman. Like if I want to go back and excavate and see who I was, that's one good thing I did. I made so many dumb errors, but that was pretty smart. Like I saved, look at that Mad Magazine cover.
I love that. I saw that cover.
Aren't you glad I saved this from the Supremes album?
No.
No, you don't think that's...
I wasn't missing that.
You don't think that's cool?
It's okay.
Be honest, Jerry. Come on. Come out of your shell. Yeah,
I went through all of my stuff recently.
The new breed of
and stuff. Threw out almost all of it.
Of course you did, because that's you and I'm me.
I thought, my kids don't care what I did. I even thought that.
Aren't you glad I kept the World Fair thing?
Yeah. You never know which is going to be the one, right?
I think these are all good.
No. Some of them are good.
What about this from Richard Belzer?
I love that.
First of all, it's Daily Planet from the desk of super comic Richard Belzer.
Oh, wow.
Now,
it's a great shot of him, by the way.
It's just too much.
When I play The Beacon, I always ask the audience, I talk about how I started in New York at a club called Catch a Rising Star. How many of you remember it? And that moment, Bill, there's like about 10% of the audience will applaud. It's a great moment. I just love that. Remember how cool that joint was?
But,
and so much fun to just share that for a second.
But isn't it a little sad that only, well, and look what he wrote.
A little, no.
To potentially.
Tremendously sad.
To potentially one of the greats.
That's
Richard
funny.
Belzer.
That's funny.
I think he was talking about himself, but. I think it's sad that only 10% of the people, well, you know what?
Come on.
You're right. You're right. You know what?
Let it all go. Let it go.
No, I do like them, but I must say bad memories do not make me sad. Good memories make me sad.
Oh.
You know, bad memories, it's like, great, it's over.
Right.
Good memories, it's like, shit, I'll never have that again, you know?
Right, no, you'll never have anything again.
You seem more at peace with that.
I am.
I know.
You know what I came to the other day? Because I'm going through this thing with the movie, you know, and you're doing a lot of press and they're watching the movie and they're responding to it, you know, and it hit me the other morning. An insincere compliment is absolutely of equal value as a totally genuine compliment. There is no difference in value. They're both utterly meaningless and just as nice. An insincere compliment is just as nice. I don't care if they're lying to my face. But it doesn't matter what they think anyway.
What the fuck are you talking about? This is ridiculous. Like, I gave you a very wonderful compliment, I think, and it came from me, and it's very sincere, and it's true about you. That's got to mean more than an insincere compliment.
Not in that situation where you're meeting strangers and they're saying, oh, I loved your movie. Great. That's great. That's just as great. I don't have to know. Really? Did you really?
Give me that rabbit thing back.
A compliment from you who knows me.
That's what I'm saying.
That's different.
Oh, okay.
That's different.
I hope so.
I'm talking about 90% of the things people tell you in show business are not true and not sincere.
Of course.
And that's okay.
And even when they... I shouldn't even admit this. It makes me sound petty, but I think all show people are the same. Sometimes people will give you a compliment and you still don't like it because it's like, yeah, but you noticed the wrong thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, you liked the show, but you thought that was the best part of
yes.
it?
Yes.
And it's like, you can't.
Petty doesn't even describe how small-minded that is. I don't know. Is what's below petty, whatever that adjective would be.
You don't feel, you never felt that way?
No.
Really?
No. Take what you like, whatever you like. What do I care what you like?
All right. Then why do you keep arguing when I say you're more mature than you have?
I like to argue.
I know. Good.
I don't even believe what I'm, the positions I'm taking.
We're not even arguing. But... Yeah, no, that's true. I feel like I've evolved a long way,
mm-hmm.
but I started really far back.
Way far back, yeah.
It's true. I didn't want to talk about that. Oh, here, look at this. No, I always thought...
This is so funny, all this crap you brought out here.
Tell me you're not enjoying this.
I'm not.
You're such a...
No, you said to tell me, so I did. So get smart, Joe.
Look at this. My father was in radio.
Right now.
Right? Mutual Broadcasting System. This is when the media was respected by this country because these were mutual men of...
mutual men. So where's your dad? Is he in here?
Right here. Look right here. Bill Maher.
Your dad
Mutual
is Medicine. Bill Maher?
Of course.
Well, that explains a lot. I think we've cracked this case wide open right here.
Mutual Men of Conviction. Isn't that awesome?
It doesn't resemble you much.
Look at... You can't see that. It's a drawing.
So that's not what he looked like?
He did look like that, but you know.
You're very handsome.
Thank
he looks
you.
Kind of...
Oh, no. Are we looking at
Arnold
him?
Arnold Stang-ish.
It's a drawing from this
right.
these creeps who made this thing.
Men of Conviction. So were these guys? They were
staff announcers.
But they weren't journalists.
Well, I think they would consider themselves journalists, Jerry. They had deep voices, and they were on the radio. And
does your dad have a deep voice? You have a deep voice.
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course he did. when he took me to the radio station, you know, once in a while, I'd be like scared. Like, shit out of me because they all, hello, young man. Mel Sharbert. I mean, look at some of these names. Whitney Bolton. Charles Batchelder. Bill Costello was good, as was Jack Allen and Martin Edwards. you know,
Tony, I did a little shtick. We made a couple of little video promotion pieces for the movie, and one is where I'm called into the office of the president of Pop-Tarts.
Oh.
So I needed a name for who would be the president of Pop-Tarts, and we came up with Kelman P. Gasworth. He says, I'm Kelman P. Gasworth, the president of Pop-Tarts.
Gasworth.
And I'm sitting at the end of this long conference table, and I go, oh, I just made a whole movie about Pop-Tarts. He goes, well, did you now?
I can't wait to see this movie.
It's fun.
It comes out on Netflix.
Friday.
So it's funny because when I read about this, I thought, it's both you making a movie about Pop-Tarts. It's both inscrutable and inevitable. Like,
that is a great line. That's a great line.
You really, like, you were going, and I just want to know before I see it, or maybe you don't want to say this, then just don't, but what is the metaphor? I mean, but plainly, it can't just be about Pop-Tarts.
Oh my gosh, no. No, it's quite a deep story, Bill.
But it has to be a metaphor for something.
You got me.
Really?
Yeah. What?
Again, we're not like the serial killer and the detective. We're not really like.
No. It's, I like important seeming men in suits, like those names you're talking about, puffs and flakes and sprinkles in a very serious way. That to me was funny. I like, it's about, it really is about a childhood fantasy and wanting to hang on to your childhood and that time and that product. And to make this movie, I get to go back there. I get to go back to when the only thing I cared about was the Stingray and my cereal,
right,
and the TV shows that I liked. And that was, you know, it was like a little soap bubble that I got to get inside for a few weeks.
Yeah, I mean, I have that inclination, but our childhood is now just so long ago.
Yeah.
I mean.
But the fun of it is still there.
Yeah, I know.
So, and with a movie, you get to recreate it.
But you don't.
You don't get to really go there. No.
No, but you don't have intimations of mortality when you dwell on the distant past like that, that it reminds you that you're closer to the end.
I'm not that in love with, like, you really love life.
Don't you?
You love it. It's okay.
Oh, come on now. Your life? Oh.
Because,
like, when I knew this was your birthday, and I was like, I bet you he's the same place with birthdays that I am, which is like, I had a big party here, right in this room at 60. You had one at 65. Mm-hmm. After that, like, yeah, it's happening, but we don't need to go into it at all. Sometimes people, mine's in January, sometimes people say to me a couple of weeks after, they say, oh, didn't you just have a birthday? And I go, you know, maybe. I don't know. I might have. I didn't check my calendar. I didn't check my calendar. You know, because it's just like it's happening. I can't deny it. But let's just ignore it.
Yeah.
It's at a certain point, because you'd still look generically late middle age, which is great. You know, you don't read old.
No, like, neither do you.
Like Biden.
Yeah.
Like reads old,
yes.
And Trump reads.
Yes.
Crazy, but not old, you know.
Yeah, okay.
He reads, he just reads differently.
Well, he's got a lot of makeup on, you know.
A lot.
And the hair color and all that crap.
Yeah, I always say he's like Kiss. He puts on the face paint and the wig, and it's always 1976.
That is fantastic. That is a great joke.
It is kind of true.
That is
right?
A great joke. He's like Kiss. He's so funny.
But yeah, so we could probably, I mean, Mick Jagger is doing it at 80. Doing rock shows.
Okay.
No,
it's
I'm saying,
amazing. It's amazing.
Right, but I'm saying if a guy can do rock and roll at 80, certainly comedy.
What do you think you'll be doing at 80?
I hope very similar to what I'm doing now.
Really?
I would love to. I only in my 60s came to realize how right my mother was when she once said to me, yeah, I really like my 50s and 60s the best.
mm-hmm.
of all the decades. I said, that's crazy. 60s? What are you, fucking nuts?
Yeah. But their 60s is our 80s, physically. I don't do anything different now than I did in my 40s. I could do any number of shows. I could go
exactly.
I haven't made any adjustments.
I same way.
But I imagine.
I mean, there's a diminishment to everything.
Yes.
I mean, you know, I can still play basketball, but
yeah,
you know,
that's amazing. That's amazing.
And you know, I mean.
But yeah, I think you maybe have a little tighter grip on this lifetime than I do.
It is what it is. All you can ever be is good for your age. But I, you know, as far as how far you can go, I feel like I'm, and you are too, for a somewhat different reason, uniquely suited to another decade, because I never was selling, I can dance, I can jump around.
Right.
I was selling wisdom.
Right.
And sophistication.
Right.
I mean, that's why HBO has been such a good home for me. It's
right.
a sophisticated
right.
audience. It's
right.
a sophisticated show. That word, maybe I'm not, you know, putting that on myself, but yeah, that is what I strive for. And the audience is a sophisticated audience. And there's precious little left for people who are sophisticated. Mm. That's a genre. That's a niche.
But it's always been a small niche. That
yes, always.
Yeah.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. You have a much broader, you know.
Somewhat broader. But
majorly broader. It's one another reason why I'm probably not going to do any more stand-up is because, like, first of all, when you're on TV every week, it's very hard for people to come out and, you know, it's harder to get
right.
that you're less unique.
Right, right.
Also, they tend to think I'm a political comic, which is limiting.
Oh, right.
So, like, there's guys who are, like, not half as funny as me selling twice as many tickets.
Right,
I'm a little sick
right.
of it.
Yeah.
Not that I can't do nice shows in theaters, but I've always been fighting a little uphill on those things.
I see.
I think your stand-up is my editorial. That's what I want to do
right.
till they put me in the grave.
Right.
Is every week come up with that one thing. And, you know, because it's almost Seinfeldian, because it's building one very small, mm-hmm. limited, but trying to perfectly craft it, and then it's over.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know,
right.
next week there's a new one. And
wow.
on Monday, we nail down the premise before the weekend, and
oh,
then
yeah.
on Monday, you know, I read all the passes and put it together, you know.
Right.
My own version, and then, you know, sew it together. And each day, first it gets fatter, then it gets smaller.
Uh-huh.
You know, there's a method to it, to so that it's by Friday.
That would be a vacation that, for me, if I would just sit with you and not contribute, but just watch you do that, that would entertain me more than any trip to anywhere in the world.
Yeah,
because I think, I don't know how you do it, but the end result is so elegant. And
thank you.
That is what I love and appreciate more than anything. It's simplicity and elegance in writing.
Thank you. Me too.
And of course, getting the job done comedically.
Yeah.
We got to do all those three things
right.
in the piece.
Right.
When that is executed, I just feel full of music. I just love it. And I, you know, we're so lucky that, you know, I do think sometimes I watch great pitchers, great athletes, and I think, oh, this guy's only going to get 12 years of this to be able to play
right.
this music.
Oh, yeah. Right.
And it's a huge career for a pitcher, right? But for us, if they told us you can only do this 12 years, it's ridiculous. Musicians, does it bother you? You're so you're very, very sophisticated musically, and you had all those Paul Simon lyrics in your head was amazing. But what's your theory? And I know you have one on why these great, great, great songwriters are not able to find that thing in their later years.
Too many drugs.
Come on.
No, but too many drugs. I'm partly. But also, I just think it's innate. Music is something that flowers in youth. I mean,
don't you think music is sexual?
Of course.
If you're not horny, you can't write a great song.
Well, oh, that's ridiculous.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah, that's because not all songs are about sex.
Yes, they are. Everyone.
Stop it.
But what is your theory on older songwriters struggling to find that same magic.
I couldn't agree more. First of all, it's rare, and I'm not going to name names.
No.
There are exceptions to that, but they are rare. I thought the Eagles' 2007 album was really good.
Yeah.
Was like, could fit in, it was a double album. If you made it into like just one kick-ass album, it would be fit in their oeuvre pretty well. Anyway.
But there are people that we love, desperately love.
Desperately.
That write stuff now that is...
And have for 25 years
right.
not been good.
Right.
Because part of it, I think, is you get too ahead of the parade. Like, you always want to be like a little ahead of the audience.
Right.
Otherwise, you're over. But not so far ahead. They're like, what?
Right.
And I think sometimes you're so good that like, oh, I've done that and this would be different. It's like, yeah, but I just want to, you know, you got to hit that sweet spot where it's striking me as something a little different, but mm-hmm. not so alien that me, just the young man in the 22nd row,
right.
can't appreciate it because I'm not a musician.
Mm-hmm.
I could just appreciate what you do.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of, I guess, the equivalent of being like a comics comic.
Mm-hmm.
Who, you know, makes the other comics laugh.
Right.
And, you know, I always felt like that was what you, like I always felt you at Catch. Like, you always had kind of an attitude about Catch, like, this is a shiny object. Because it was the hot club, right?
Yes.
You weren't the man at the hot club. You were at the comics at the hot.
That's
the
right.
hot club was Belzer, and it was the hot club because, like, that's where the stars went.
Yep.
And the celebrities right. went, and the mafia was there.
Yep.
And it was just, you know, singers and
yep.
Belzer. It was, and I think you were just like, okay, enjoy your shiny object. Because I'm going to just do what I do, which isn't quite as flamboyant as some of this other stuff going on, and
right.
I will be the bigger star because I'm going to be on television, which is a cool medium, perfectly suited to me. I read that on you. And
well, you can read it, but I never thought it or felt
but
that.
But it turned out to be true.
Yeah, well, you have an amazing eye for those kinds of things. I just, in those yeah. days, Bill, I wasn't.
But I just felt like you, that the fact that it was ill-suited to your exact persona.
It was.
Was to your credit because, again, that wasn't what was going to make you a star, jumping around on the piano
yeah.
and all that. Blah, blah, same as the comedy star out here, a lot of
yeah.
lot of stuff that looks great in a small club, but
there are those.
You had your eye on the prize.
I did. And when I would see those, sometimes they would come to the comic strip and struggle. And I would realize, oh, they're out of context. And it's not working. And that's not what this game's about. This game is about put me in any context and I'll make it work.
Right.
That's the bigger game to play.
Yes. You and I had an argument many times about, like, is there such a thing as a bad crowd?
Oh, yeah.
And I, of course, took the position, yes, when they don't like me, they're
yeah.
bad.
Yeah.
And you took the position, again, more mature, Goofus and Gallant, always.
Yeah.
Gallant believes, and you're right.
There's no right. It's just it's just a sport. You're playing.
It's a better attitude to have.
Right,
that,
yes.
You know, you were like.
But you're also right. Of course there's bad crowds.
Yes, but you once said, of course they're in a bad mood. Why do you think they're at a comedy club? You're the doctor.
Yes.
They don't come to the doctor when they
feel well.
Right.
Yeah.
So.
That's funny.
It's another piece of advice I remembered and put into practice a mere 17 years later. No, I got around everything. It just,
yep.
some people just takes a long time.
Yeah.
You know.
What about, I mean, everybody's, who cares?
See, this is not why you're not afraid of dying. Everything that comes into your head is, who cares? It's not that. But
don't you feel that changing? I mean, I'm 70, and I really feel things changing in my perspective. Names I haven't. Who is this singer? All these things, even politics, even social movements. I'm reading a lot of Marcus Aurelius. Have you ever read that?
In college.
Book? Yeah.
Absolutely.
You should pick it up again. It's really great.
Meditations, what's it called?
Meditations.
Right. He was the Roman emperor in 180
AD. 150 AD. And
150.
He is a fantastic guy to get you to zoom out and go, all these things you're worried about, all these things that you see happening, they've all happened before. They're all going to happen again. Everything that you're worried about is much smaller than it is than you make it in your head. That's his basic message. And he, being told that by the Emperor of Rome in 150 AD
right.
is a very nice daily. I read it almost every day. I'll read a page or two. And I just, I love to imagine him in his bedroom there, the leader of the entire world, an emperor, a Roman emperor, and saying, yes, you're going to talk to a lot of annoying people today. That's what every day is like. Why are you surprised? People are annoying.
I like to imagine the peasants of 150 AD. Hey, did you hear the emperor has a new treaties out? Oh, great. I can't wait to pick it up. He was like the Sam Harris of his day. He had the morning meditation and, yeah. By the way, if people want to have an image of who Marcus Aurelius is, think of the movie Gladiator.
Yeah.
And he was played by Peter
I thought it was Joaquin Phoenix.
He played the son.
Oh, Marcus Aurelius, grew up son.
Who kills his father.
Right.
He kills Marcus Aurelius in the beginning.
Well, not in real life, though.
I think he did.
No.
No?
No, he died of natural causes in his 50s.
You know a lot about Marcus Aurelius.
I'm kind of into him these days.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
I didn't think I'd ever hear that from you.
Why?
Well, just because you didn't seem like a history buff.
I'm not really, but I love philosophy, and I love his philosophy. And I just find it helpful. I like shrinking things down.
Yes, you do. Yeah. Yes, you do. And you do it better than anybody.
Oh, thank you.
I mean, I always say that about you. Like the act that like every single person can love and the most intelligent person in the room is also not insulted by it.
Right. Right.
And that's I feel like excellence is always getting to that golden mean.
Yes.
Of like the two things that are in opposition, but somehow you bring them together.
Right.
You know.
Well, that's what I'm, I think you might find that in Unfrosted, the Pop-Tart movie. It's a silly idea for a movie, and the jokes are silly, but as we know, there are no silly jokes. They're either good or they're not. And you'll find there's a level of sophistication in the silliness. That is my ultimate. When I first saw Monty Python when I was a kid on PBS in the early 70s, I lost my mind. The sophisticated silliness that they were doing absolutely lit me up. Like, this is everything that I want, everything that I love. I think Get Smart had that. I think Peter Sellers had that. He's acting dumb, but there is such a sophistication to it. It's because, as we know, as comedians, acting dumb is really not, you know, Laurel and Hardy are not stupid.
No.
I wasn't a Stooges guy, but Laurel and Hardy is elegant and sophisticated.
You were not a Stooges guy?
No. I didn't like Mo. He's I don't think he's funny. Curly, he was carrying the whole damn show.
But we were five.
I wasn't. I watched comedians when I was five years old going, guy's got nothing.
Did you did you watch Officer Joe Bolton?
Of course.
Okay. Didn't he introduce the Three Stooges? Wasn't that his?
Yeah. He had the Stooges. Okay. I watched it.
And Superman also?
No, they didn't have Superman. They had those movie shorts.
Superman just stood by itself?
That was a real series.
Oh, I remember. I mean,
yeah. And still pretty good, by the way. I've been watching that lately. George Reeves is the greatest Superman of all time. His sophistication and those double-breasted suits. That's another reason I wanted to do Unfrosted. I wanted to look like George Reeves. Did you like that Superman show when they would close the door and the suit would shake?
What? I lived for it. You know this.
Really?
When I was a kid.
Yeah.
I remember in high school, I probably have that somewhere in my Rat Pack file, but we made a list of every episode that we could remember. Like there was probably 100 episodes.
Wow.
I remember all the episodes. We've talked about it. Kaborium X.
Yeah.
I mean,
I got to do a commercial with Jack Larson and Noel Neal in, I think.
Yes, 89. I remember it. Yes.
Yeah.
You did the American Express thing.
Yeah.
I mean, I know.
Gigantic thrill.
And your bit was, you know, one of your first ones. The classes as a brilliant disguise. It was like, that is so you.
Yeah.
And then somebody else had a great bit about, it's a bird, it's a plane. Who mistakes a bird with a plane? Whose joke is that?
That's really, I don't know, but I heard that. That's a good one too, yeah.
It's like a perfect example of that bit that, like, it was laying there on the ground.
Yeah.
Anybody could have seen it.
Yeah.
Right?
I have a Frankenstein bit I'm doing now about the sport jacket. Why is he wearing a sport jacket?
That's great.
It's an AI bit. It's a
really
part of an
great
AI bit about making fake brains is risky. We can see that from Frankenstein.
Oh, you that's know? Funny. That's a great joke. Yeah, exactly.
And he goes, well, I thought maybe we'd go someplace nice afterwards. No, it's Romania in 1820. There's no place nice. No one's going to say to you, I'm sorry, Mr. Stein, it's jackets only this evening.
That's hysterical. That's funny. I talk about monsters now with, you know, the toxic masculinity that they're always talking about. It's true. Men are toxic.
What are we talking about? When you say
lacking?
I
think men have been ruined by the phone.
Yeah.
And pornography. You know,
uh-huh.
And it's rapey. It's domineering. It's not, you know, it's just, and this is what young men see.
Uh-huh.
You know, when we were kids, it was, if you had a Playboy.
Right.
That was huge.
Yeah.
Now they see horrible things, you know.
Yeah, I can't imagine.
Choking and spanking.
Oh, God.
What? What?
That's horrible.
I know. I mean, what these kids are, when you think about how innocent our childhood was.
Yes.
The level of innocence is just like from a different, what?
Yeah, absolutely. And we can't fix it, Bill. Broke it.
Why do you think I'm always trying to fix it? There's a difference between being, trying to remedy something and just being amazed by it. Like age fascinates me. And people say, oh, don't worry about it. I'm not worried about it.
Oh,
I'm just fascinated by it.
Right,
I'm fascinated
right.
by different generations. I'm fascinated by how different, the differences that I could see in my lifetime.
Right, I know. And I said to my mother one time, who passed about 10 years ago at the age of 99, and I remember asking her one time, do you remember when cars suddenly became popular? She said, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
My mother, when she was born, there was no cars around.
When my mother was born, women couldn't vote.
Right.
1919.
Yeah.
Women got the vote in 1920.
Right. I say to my kids, your kids are going to say to you, you mean they let people just get in cars and go as fast as they wanted? Yeah, for the most part. I mean, there were laws, but people did pretty much whatever they want.
My grandma...
yeah. Didn't they crash and die all the time?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and children died often.
Yeah.
You know, they'd get kicked by a horse on the farm. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's why they had a lot of kids. They expected a few of them to...
So better or worse, the way we value life today or the way we were more casual, so much more casual about it in years past.
I mean, it's so easy to say, oh, you know, back then, please, we are so seduced by, and I am as much as anyone, by creature comforts and convenience.
Yes.
No, I don't. With all the bullshit going on, we live in the most amazing fucking times.
Yes, yes.
I mean, the climate change is probably going to get us at some point, but it hasn't yet.
Right.
We walked out here today. We weren't like evaporated by the rays of the sun or something. I mean, it was a beautiful day.
Yep.
The grass is green. The sky is blue. I know it's really not. There's lots of things going on behind the scenes that are horrible, blah, blah, blah. But we're still living in that time where we're basically, you know, yes, health certainly can rear its ugly head, and there's lots of poisons everywhere and lots of terrible things, and Trump could do this and democracy and blah, 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 nuclear war. But for the moment, you know, when I'm sitting at a dinner with people and they're like, oh, the world's ending. I'm, look around you, you fuck, you dumbass. We're at this fucking awesome restaurant. They're bringing you this food. It's probably this dinner's going to cost $700. You're not even going to fucking blink at paying the check. Shut the fuck up about how terrible things is. When they're going to, I'm not going to lose my nervous system about Trump again. If he ends the world, he's going to end the world. I'm not going to fucking go nuts again if he wins another term. I just can't.
I hope you have that wherewithal.
Well, what are you going to do?
I don't know. I'm trying to stay right there.
Yes.
I'm trying to stay right there.
What, are you going to get anxious like a millennial? No.
Yeah, it's still, right. Exactly. Know. That is...
I mean, that generation, especially the Z generation...
Ugh.
What do you know? But your kid, I mean, your kids are great.
Thank you.
I mean, I think with great parenting, you can still make great kids.
Sure. Well, you don't really make them. You have a hand in it.
You're like the manager.
Yeah, you're the manager. If you give them advice, they take it. They don't take it.
No, like the manager of a team.
Yes,
like they say
that's right.
A good manager can affect like 6 to 8 games a year.
That's right.
You think that's all a parent can do?
I have no idea.
But wait, you raised three kids.
It's mostly what you didn't do wrong, really bad stuff. But mostly the way we were raised, you were kind of left to your own devices, and you're in a fairly healthy environment, and hopefully you make decent choices. Yeah. And the same is true today.
I remember that night you and Chris Rock were in my dressing room before the show, and I asked him something, you guys, something like, oh, your kids, do they play together? And you both went, Bill, the wives handle that. And I got, okay, I see.
Yeah, I have the most amazing wife. I really
I know
love
you
my
do.
Wife. Right. I got to a point with my wife now that I can't believe how great she is because... I can't really say that, but in the single world, it always runs out of gas, and I found a woman where it never runs out. I'm always excited to see her.
That's great.
We always have fun. I love talking with her, and it's fun. It's fun, but it's a little bit of luck, or maybe it's instinct. I don't know.
But are you an empty nester now?
Not yet. My son is finishing high school.
But you will be.
I will be in a few months, yeah.
And is that a big changeover?
That's what people say, but Justin and I are, we're good.
It's got to be a big difference without the sound of children frolicking.
But Bill, all these things, what?
I feel like you're going back to like thinking that I am... somehow ruining the passage of time, and I'm just remarking, and I'm fascinated by it.
I'm fascinated, and I enjoy that that's over, and now we're doing this. And
right,
anything else in life?
Okay, well, you just characterize what I think about maybe quitting stand-up.
Okay.
I've enjoyed it, but maybe, you
that's
know.
Cool. That's very cool of you to let your mind be that free. That's cool.
I mean, I think it's always great to stretch.
To
put yourself out of your comfort zone.
Just change the menu.
Right.
Change. We're doing this now.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Because, you know, at our age, you know, it's an ageist country. They're always going to try to move you out. I mean, it's the nature of what?
Not in our thing. Nobody cares how old you are.
Well, that's another reason why I would add it to the hopper about me maybe getting out of it. I do think there is a generational element to stand-up because humor is not something that translates through the ages that well. And like the humor of today is a lot more about feelings, nothing more than feelings. And like people want to see someone of their own generation. I get it.
Of course, but they also want to see people that can really do it.
I understand
and
that.
Some can and some can't, and it's irrespective of age or anything.
Yes, that's true too. But you're an icon, you know.
Thank you. I'm going to be nicer when you give a comment. No, I need to be nicer.
I didn't mean it like that.
Okay.
I meant... You don't have to. All you have to do is put your name in the paper,
right,
and it'll sell out.
Right.
Maybe if I was there, I would still do it. That would be an element that would influence me.
Probably not.
I think I'd still make this decision.
Right. Right.
But yeah, it makes it a lot easier. You know, I mean, the audience that comes is certainly a great. I mean, look, I love it. It's a love affair because anytime they're paying a hard money ticket to see you, you know, they want you to do what you do very specifically, and I just want to do it for them,
right.
You know,
I'm getting sad, Bill, that this show is almost over. I really was looking forward to this as much as you were.
Oh, good.
Because it's you. And I also just love the vibe of this show.
Well,
and
I have one more thing to show you.
Oh,
from
boy.
From my thing. This was my father's.
How I Met Hollywood's Biggest Stars by Bill Maher. This is amazing. What in the world? What is this?
Some gag gift somebody gave my father in 1960 whatever.
Oh, it's great. And it's all Chinese, folks. See, show and tell with Bill Maher.
We were so innocent.
Yeah.
Well, as a great man once said, it's so nice when it happens
good. Oh, God, Bill, you did it again. Freddie DeCordova, after my first Tonight Show, put his arm around me as we walked off the set. And he said, it's so nice when it happens good.
If you don't know you're in show business at that moment,
yeah,
when somebody says something like that. All right, pal. Thank you.
Thank you.
This was what I thought it would be.
Club.
I'm going to have this framed and sent to you.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, I'm a World's Fair obsessive.
I didn't know that.